Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are tuned in to the finest gospel station on the internet, the Love Lift Me Up Show. Hallelujah. Giving Jesus all the praise. Featuring gospel artists, authors, teachers, writers, actresses, actors, educators, and community leaders. Let's give it up for the host of the show, Dr. Elfrida Love, and the star of the show, the one and only Jesus Christ. Hallelujah. Glory to your name.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Love of Jesus Ministry, where Jesus shines with love. I'm your host this evening, Elfrida Love, and this is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. On today, we have a very special guest, but first, let us pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day, Lord. We thank you for blessing us as we were able to wake up this morning and you started us on our way. We thank you for just your divine grace and your mercy, and we thank you for traveling grace. We thank you for all of the people that we were able to connect with today, those peoples that we will be able to connect with in the future, Heavenly Father. Lord, we ask that you bless this ministry to be something that is pleasing, something that is acceptable, something that is great within your sight. We ask that you bless Miss Kiara as she comes on today and shares her gift that you have given her, and we ask that you continue to help her to be the person that you would have her to be. In Jesus' name we pray, amen and amen. And today's reading comes from Psalm 92, Numbers 1 and 2, and it reads, "It is a good thing to give thanks unto the Lord and to sing praises unto thy name, O Most High, to show forth thy loving kindness in the morning and thy faithfulness every night." I have read to you Psalm 92, 1 and 2. May the Lord add a blessing to the hearers, the doers, and the seekers of his holy word. And without further ado, I would like to introduce you to someone who is a just worldwide director. She's a mother. She's known by many because she's been on many different media sites. She also have a film coming out entitled Christmas Wedding Baby, and I would like to introduce to some and present to others Miss Kiara C. Jones. Miss Jones, are you on the line?
I am on the line.
Okay, well, welcome to the Love Lift. Yes, ma'am, I can hear you very well, and welcome.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to ask you a few questions about your, first of all, just kind of about you so the listeners can understand who you are, and then we're going to get into your projects, okay? Is that all right?
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. My first question is, how did you get into directing and producing film?
Well, I started out in broadcast radio and television. I did live television news for quite a few years and traveled doing news stories. And then I moved to Las Vegas where I did live shows and events for a great company called Encore Productions that does sort of large installations like in arena theaters for concerts and corporate events and that sort of thing. And then I wasn't really happy living in Las Vegas, so I thought I should move. And I came up with a grand idea to move to New York City. But I didn't want to just go. I really needed to go with a purpose. And I thought, you know, maybe it's time for me to take the knowledge that I have in storytelling and really start telling my own story. Because I was telling other people's stories in news and delivering messages, you know, through corporate media and that sort of thing. But I really wanted to use my talents to explore my own voice. And so I decided to go to film school. I applied at New York University, and they accepted me, and that began the next chapter in my evolution.
Wow. And like I said before we get into your project, if you could tell us a little bit also about the different media outlets that you've had the opportunity to work with as well.
I've had the privilege of I've been specifically in film for about 7 years now, and I've had great luck connecting with the right people to get my films. Luck and blessings and really talented people who offered themselves to help me pursue my goals. We've had films on HBO, we've had films on BET, we've had films on PBS. We were finalists in Lifetime Movie Competition. We just won the Bombay Sapphire Imagination Series. So, it's been a great journey with wonderful highlights of having our work to be seen, because that's a big challenge as an artist. You know, you create something, and as much as it is a piece of self-expression, you want that work to be experienced by someone else. And it's a real challenge, especially in the independent filmmaking community, to have your work seen somewhere. So I've been really blessed to have my work seen in quite a few places. If you go on my website at www.cultivatedfilms.com, you'll see some of the works there and see some links to works where they could be screened, free screens, and trailers and things. And right now we have a great film called Black Girl in Paris, which is still screening on HBO. If you have HBO or HBO Go, you can look it up and see it now.
Wow. Well, congratulations on all of those different opportunities that you've had. That is wonderful and a blessing. Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about the Cultivated Film? Is that your particular startup project, or do you work with Cultivated Films?
Cultivated Films is my company. I started it, and I started it specifically as a place where I like to say that artists can come and explore their voices and be nurtured. I have a pretty nurturing spirit. Most people would tell you, like, when I went to graduate school, I was placed in the room with 35 of the most interesting and talented and diverse individuals I'd ever met, and somehow I became like the class mom. When filmmakers come to me with projects, I tend to not really judge the content of the project. I look at the filmmaker, and if I believe in that person, I will do everything that I can to help them realize their vision. And so I've had the privilege of working with a lot of really great filmmakers, Lucco Melzi, a wonderful Italian director, Keandra Parks, Anya Marquardt, whose great film, She Lost Control, is screening all over the world right now. As a matter of fact, it just screened in Jerusalem 2 weeks ago, during the whole bombings and everything. And it's going to Vladivostok, Russia next week. So it's really thrilling to see, my sort of sense of individual working, that, I can see these people who want to do something, who need someone to help them accomplish their goal and be that person that stands next to them along the way and help them realize their vision. So, yeah, that Cultivated Films is my baby. One of them.
Wow. And I like the title, actually, Cultivated, because you're cultivating and you're helping people to rise up and to be able to be productive. That is wonderful. Okay. Now, go ahead.
I'm sorry. It's kind of a funny thing being in this place at this time when we, politically, you hear this term like job creators tossed around in this and the other. And as artists, we tend to think of ourselves as starving artists, but we really are job creators, because we come up with an idea that becomes a ship that a lot of people get on as we're on our way to realizing our dream. And while they're on my ship, which is part of the Cultivated Film thing, I want them all to be nurtured. I want every person who gets on board to be nourished by the work that they put into this particular project. And when they get off a stronger, better professional, and somehow closer to whatever their own goal is. So like, we're on this journey together. You're helping us do our thing, but at the same time, we're helping you get to where you want to be. So we're cultivating, a group of artists that can help change the face, I think, of cinema. We'll talk about that later. But the other thing is we're also working on cultivating audiences, because audiences have been trained to sort of, you know, think that candy is food, and candy is not food. So we're working on that too. That's the best. That's a whole other set of missions. That'll be interview two.
Wow. Kiara, we're going to come back to this cultivated films, because your vision is just amazing, and we have some questions. But let me ask you about your new project, The Christmas Baby Wedding. Tell me about that, and we're going to I'm going to ask you some more questions regarding that particular – is it an internet movie?
No. It's an independent feature film, and it's Christmas Wedding Baby. It's my mm-hmm. first feature-length film. That is mine. I've produced feature-length films before. I am the writer, director, producer, and now editor on this film. So it's really, I said one of my babies is my other baby. My third baby is in the room next door, and he better be night-night. he's actually my first baby. Let's keep it real. But Christmas Wedding
right.
Baby is it's a romantic comedy. And it's about a young woman who goes home for her wedding and discovers that her first love has been hired as her wedding photographer. That's like
wow.
the basic premise of the film. But the thing about it is, it's sort of a simple premise and a recognizable concept. When I say that, when I give people that's what you call the one-liner in the industry, when I throw people that one-liner, they go, oh, you know. But the thing is, it's about so much more than that once you get inside. That's like my trick. You know, that's the candy coating on the sugar apple, you know, the candy apple. There's
right.
a lot more inside. The film is really about three sisters who are in very different stages of womanhood. The youngest, who is the baby, she's about to get married and, you know, having these questions about what love is and romanticism, and sort of is that sweep you off your feet thing the real, or is there something else out there? Or is there something that she hasn't even begun to look for in herself that she should be looking for? The middle sister has been in a long-term relationship with her boyfriend. They have two children. They're not married, and she is really fed up with it. She's at the end of her wits at his inability to commit, and she's ready to step out and not really knowing or realizing what that means and the dangers. And we watch her in the film sort of, you know, dip her toe into that water and see what's going to happen. And the older sister, who's been sort of the matriarch of the family, has decided to have a child on her own out of wedlock, much to the chagrin of her family. And they're all under the umbrella of their very sharp-tongued, quick-witted, and strong-willed mother, who has very – we have a standby for the New York soundtrack in my background.
okay.
Has very sort of what I would consider archaic ideals of femininity and womanhood. She's very traditional, even though her actions are unapologetically contemporary. Her mindset is very traditional. So there's a lot happening in there in the women, and then the men in the film are really great also, and very dynamic, and we get to see them think through their processes and try to understand, you know, how we all get to where we are. So the film ends up at the end of the day being sort of it's a healing project for me, where we explore a bunch of questions that I have about the world, and I don't know that we get to any answers, but maybe we can start a dialogue that helps us all better understand one another.
Wow, that is excellent. And let me ask you this, as I was reading your website and when you were explaining to me the three women in the Christmas Wedding Baby, let me ask you, can women really have it all? What do you think about that?
What day is it? It's Friday? No, it's Saturday. It depends on what day you ask me. my gut right now in this moment is not in the way that it was presented to us. I think as much as I love our feminist movement from the 60s and those beautiful women who came out of that, I think they sold us a bad bill of goods, because the idea that you were going to be able to be an astute professional and have children and care for a man that you really love and have your personal sense of self-identity and have your relationship with your God and be sexy and cute all the time and lots of money and all of that, I don't know where in the 24-hour day you get time for that. You know, my son is almost 3, and I'm in a constant battle with myself about where I should be and what I should be doing with my time. And as busy as I am, and no matter what I'm doing, I always feel like I should be somewhere else, and there's something that's being sacrificed in this moment. And I think that having it all would be to not feel that. You know, if I was doing all the things that I was doing and not feeling any pressure or any guilt, or any resentment or any loss, then I would say that, yes, you know, I was having it all, or women could have it all. But when I talk to women, even the ones who I think are, you know, they look great on the outside, they are often feeling the same sort of pains and anxieties that I am. So, you know, I had asked, I won't say his name, an astute professional in this industry very early on when I started, you know, do you think a woman could have the same type of career that you've had as a successful filmmaker, you know, with children and a great family and, you know, your great sense of self and identity? And his answer was no, because I had a wife. So I will say that I am ultimately blessed that God gave me a fabulous partner, my partner Michael, who is by my side and helps me make these things happen and supports me. However, I'm still burdened with a tremendous amount of guilt. So this having it all thing, I don't know, it's like when they said, can you bring home the bacon? I can bring home the bacon and put it in the pan. But who wants to do all that? Like, that's a lot of work.
Right, right.
The bacon, can somebody else put it in the pan? And then can somebody else wash the pan? Because, you know, or I'll wash the pan, you know, if somebody else could cook it. But it's just too much work. I don't know. That's just my opinion. Hence why I made a feature film. It's really funny that you asked that, because my sisters, I have 2 sisters, and the film is about 3 sisters. So people, you know, people make leaping assumptions. I found that out when I made my very first short film. People assume that your work is about you, even though it might be about something that you're thinking. Like, artist work is not necessarily a reflection of them. This is not necessarily a reflection of me, but my sister said, the film is not about us. This is about 3 different versions of Kiara. You know, it's like Kiara at 3 different stages of her life. And I could see that. I could see why she would see that. You know, it is about, you know, a woman trying to close the gap between, you know, in her early 20s, the woman who she is and the woman who she thinks she is, and then her 30s, the woman who she thinks she is and the woman who she wants to be, you know. And then, you know, as you get a little older, the woman who you want to be and then the woman who you actually are. You know, it's kind of a cycle of these reflections of yourself, you know, that we're all, I think we're all as women trying to get our footing.
Right.
It's a very malleable landscape right now. All right, I'm going to stop because I think I'm rambling. Moving on.
No, you're not rambling. I was listening and actually kind of visualizing this particular film. And so let me ask you this. As I listen to you explain the different characteristics of these 3 ladies whom kind of exemplify but not really who you are in the stages of your life, what did they get along? What was their personality?
In the film?
In the film, yes.
the personality, they're 3 very distinct and different women, and I think the easiest way to say it is it's all based in love. you know, the sort of the getting along or the not getting along, you know, as sisters, and this is a sisterly thing, as sisters, we have moments where, you know, you could cut the air with a knife, but it's all based in love. I wouldn't be arguing with you if I didn't adore you, you know, if I didn't want heaven's gates to open and pour out all its blessings upon you, I would not be arguing with you, because I don't spend my time arguing with people I don't care about. They are not worth my opinion. So what are they like? I think they're all very loving. They're all very intelligent. They all have a sense of self, even if it's not what's actually their current reflection. You know, they do have a sense of self. I think they're vulnerable women. I think I don't know. They're beautiful. I adore these characters. I adore the characters, and I even more so adore the wonderful actresses who came to embody them for me. Kimberly Drummond, Lisa Rindle Anderson, Frances Turner, Maria Howell, they are just, you know, they're like better than they were on the page. And a director can only ask, especially a writer-director, you know, when I make these people up in my head, I imagine all kinds of things about them, how they walk, how they talk, what kind of lipstick they wear, how they wear their hair, you know, and then all that kind of goes away when real people start walking into the room, because each one of these people bring to the character their own senses of reality and vision on what that character would be. And these women who came in to play these roles for me, you just hear clink, they just knock the ball out of the park. They're just amazing. I get tingly just thinking about it.
I was just going to tell you that when you start naming these ladies, I've had some interactions with Miss Marie, but when you start naming like Kimberly Drummond and all these other people, I was like, wow, those are some dynamic characters. So I know this is a very strong film.
It's a very strong film. And this film is just a series of miracles is all it is. It's a series of miracles. I did not come into the film having, you know, the money, the script, the time. I mean, I literally wrote the script while I was nursing my son. I had my son in October. I started writing the script in January. It was between feedings and naps I was writing this script. And I forced it out of myself because it was time for me to graduate. And I was, you know, I needed to do a thesis project. And I had visited another amazing woman, Cheryl Antonio, who is the dean of my school. And I told her, you know, I was just going to graduate as a producer because I had done so much work as a producer. I could have graduated 2 years prior. And she said to me, you didn't come here for that. I think you need to go back and figure something out. And, you know, it's like God put these people in your path, and you never know. I didn't know when I went in to have this meeting with her where I was going to tell her that I was leaving, that she was telling me, no, you're not. I think you need to, you know, try something else, you know, try one more time. And the script poured out of me. I mean, it came out in so fast. I wrote it in like 4 weeks. I had a first draft, which is an amazing amount of time for a script. So that was January. I was workshopping the script with friends and submitting it to, you know, sort of, you know, screenwriting competitions is kind of what you do with independent film work sometimes, getting really negative feedback about the script, which is kind of funny now because people didn't get what I was trying to do. But, you know, you have to know yourself, sense of self. We keep coming back to that. I was working on someone else's feature, and I was, again, nurturing and mothering as I am, pouring myself into their project, and they decided to move the project from the East Coast to the West Coast, and therefore, you know, I got released from the project. And in that moment, I realized, wow, if I was going to do all this work to make someone else's vision be realized, why can't I do it for myself? And I just pulled the trigger, and I said, we're making our film. That was in October. We shot the film in January.
Wow.
It's like, It was like a year cycle. I wrote the film in January. The next January, we were shooting the film. From that October to January, we did a Kickstarter campaign. I did all the casting. We did production design. We just did everything. Was just fast and furious to get it all done. And every step of the way, you would think, there's no way this is going to happen. There's no way this is going to happen. And God is funny. He just likes to see you sweat sometimes. But he will show up. Let me tell you, he will show up and show out. Even to the last cast member in our film, which is there's a baby in the movie, Christmas Lane Baby. We didn't have that cast member until the day of the shoot. We thought we had someone, then they fell out. And we thought we had someone else, and they fell out. Then we thought we were just going to do it with a fake baby, which made me miserable because I didn't want to have to have a fake baby because it's like cheating. And God showed up, and the baby, he looks like he came from the two actors that played in the film, Little Frederick. I mean, he just came, and it's just like, it's so, it's, serendipity, however you want to call it. His father's name was Tommy, and the cast member who played his father in the film, in the script, his name was Tommy. You know, so it's just like, okay, what else? It was just his way of being like, chill out, kiddo. I got you,
Right. So anyways,
I don't even know where that question began, but, we were talking about the beautiful women and castings and all the things. And I will talk about the men eventually if we can get to that. I need to talk about even in those guys, but, yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk about the guys in the film.
I love men. I really love them as creatures on this planet. Like, people, are fascinated with, alligators or snakes or birds or whatever. I am just fascinated with men, the male creatures. I don't get them. I don't get how they think. So getting to write them is one of my ultimate joys because I can kind of make them do things that make sense to me.
Right.
what's more funny is I write them exactly opposite of what makes sense to me, and it comes out very real.
Oh, wow.
And the male characters in this film, Sawandi Wilson plays Gabriel, who's the photographer who she's sort of smitten with. He's got a real boyish charm that just jumps off the screen. He's the kind of person that you might not notice sitting next to you on a train until he looks you in the eye and you just go, oh my, there you are. He's got a real childlike spirit that is just fun and effervescent, and it works in every frame. And Stephen Hill, who is one of my best kept secrets as an actor, he plays, wow, who is the, he's sort of the stay-at-home dad in the film. And with a warmth, love, and respect for his children that we do not get to see from black men in cinema. Not that it does not exist. I know it does. I have one in my own house. But we don't get to see it. So I just adore writing this character who hugs his kids and plays with his kids and is there for his children. And I had the privilege of having Stephen embody that character. Now, Stephen has been in all of my films. As a matter of fact, he and Francis were in my very first film, Basura, which is on my website. It's a short film, 4 minutes. You can see it. And when I first met Stephen, he's a large black man, a big, strong, chocolate black man. And I saw him as an actor. He was always playing like these thuggish roles, and I was just bound and determined to write something for him where he got to play a gentleman, and in my first film he played a businessman, but this was the film where he really gets to play like a guy's guy. He did a role like that before in a film called Papa's Pain, which is also really good, but this is a feature-length film, and he really gets to explore the character. And he brought so much to the role, literally. He brought wardrobe. He brought music. He came to me with all sorts of suggestions on the character and character aspirations and that sort of thing, which was really fun for me to explore with him as a director because he's worked all over in television. He's in television commercials. He's in Boardwalk Empire. He's going to be in the next season of Boardwalk Empire. I mean, he's just all over the place. And I had the privilege of having him in this key role in the film. And then I had, you know, another gentleman that I got in Florida, which we can talk about my Florida cast because we shot the film in Florida, Jason Vindras, who came in for, you know, our sort of our cattle call audition, which was a big audition that we had down in Florida. And the minute he walked in the room, I was like, this is the guy. He just had that swag about him. And so sweet. He lived in Orlando and was driving back and forth to set in Jacksonville, you know, to be in the film. And they're all, this is a great thing. This is how you know you're a good mom, right? They're all coming for the premiere. Everybody's coming. They're coming from Atlanta. They're coming from Los Angeles. They're coming from Florida. They're coming from Chicago. They're coming from wherever they are, the cast, the crew, everybody's coming. As soon as we got the date, they started emailing me, I'm going to be there, I'm going to be there, I'm going to be there. And it makes me feel so good because it's one thing to make a film, right? And, you know, it's like, it's me, the director. But when the people who gave their gifts and talents to the film believe in it in a way that they want to be there to see it launch, it tells you a lot about the family that we were able to create, you know, making this film. And I'm so happy. I'm probably forgetting the Mababa, another male, one of the great men in my film, who I actually discovered. I cast him in his very first role in one of my earlier films, Men Are Mice, which won the Huffington Post Black Voices Award, and that's available online. He's in the film also, and he's my assistant editor, and he's doing color. It's like, he's like, whatever you need, I'm here for you. How can I help you? So it really takes a village. It takes a village to make an independent film, and I thank everyone who has offered themselves in my village. Okay.
Well, that's good. Wow. Now, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions for new and upcoming filmmakers using this Christmas wedding baby scenario here. The first thing is, how do you pitch your particular film to different individuals, and who do you know to pitch it to?
That's a really hard question. I ascribe to the idea that as soon as you get a really great film idea, you should start talking to people. Not necessarily because you want them to, you know, sort of buy into your film or help you create it, but because in those conversations, you're going to figure out, like, what's not right, what's not working about your film, what's exciting people. Now, people feel fearful, right, because it's intellectual property. I have a great idea. I go tell somebody, and next thing you know, they go make a movie about it. But if you look at the films that are out there, even the ones that sort of have the same storyline, there are tons of movies out there about Christmas and love and relationships, but none of them are the same. So you have to trust your individuality and trust that, you know, you're going to be able to bring your idea to fruition and use these opportunities to talk to people about the film to help make a better film, because nobody knows everything that's in your head, you know. The premise is the premise, but, like, we had an exercise at NYU in the third year called No Exit as a production design collaboration. And No Exit is a play about, I think it's three guys that are in a room and they can't get out. But every year, everybody who was in this class who did this collaboration class had to use that same platform for over a decade. And no two films ever came out alike. Like nothing even remotely close. If you laid them all side by side, you wouldn't know that was the genesis. So trust that you're not going to, you know, lose your intellectual property by talking about your film. Okay, so now you're talking about your film, you have a great idea, you got to get a script. If you don't have a script, then you don't have a property. The script is the actual vehicle that you get to drive into filmmaking. So if you're not a screenwriter, there's tons of them out there. There's tons of people in screenwriting school and screenwriting classes that might be interested in helping you write it. But write your story. Even if you're not a screenwriter, write your story so that you, as the genesis, the person who generates this idea, have your point of origin. Like, you had to have something on paper to be able to get a credit for where the thing started. That's why you see these credits that say story by. It'll say written by Kiara Jones, story by Afraid of Love, because the story was started somewhere else. So you got to get your story down on paper. Then you get a writer, or you take a screenwriting class, or, you know, there's online courses, all kinds of ways to go. Now you have your vehicle. Okay, so now you have a script. The big challenge in independent filmmaking is that everybody's trying to find the money to make their films. Finding money to make films is very, very difficult. So the thing you have to ask yourself is, this person that I'm bringing this film script to probably has a lot of options. What is it about my script that is better than what they already have on the table? And especially for, like, a filmmaker like myself who's writing their own scripts, that's even a bigger challenge. Like, why would I stop doing the thing that I want to do your thing? So beyond having the script, you need to have a real good pitch. And the pitch includes, you know, your audience, your demographics, why this film is now, like, why this film is necessary now. What makes it current? Why can't this film wait 5 years? Who's going to be in it? Who do you think should be in it? What's your dream cast? All of those sorts of things. So when you go to these production companies, the first thing they probably want to see is, like, what we call a one sheet. It's basically a synopsis and the cast breakdown, the cast character breakdown. And because nobody's going to read, like, 100 and some odd pages of your script if they're not really interested in the story. So you got to kind of get your ducks in a row. If I'm breaking it back down, you got your story, you got your script, you got your one page, which is your synopsis and your character bios. Now you're ready to go to said production company or start your Kickstarter campaign or, you know, find a DP, start building a team. If you know other people, other players in the industry, like maybe you don't know a director, but you know somebody who does sound. If you can get them to say, hey, when you're ready to go with this, if my schedule allows it, I'll be on your team, and start building your team, you can get these things to get off the ground. Now, you're asking a person who's in the industry. I'm in New York, and I'm surrounded by professionals. So I'm going to now try to think of what to say to the person who lives in Tacoma, Washington.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's kind of the same. It's kind of the same thing. You just have to do a little bit of research and research the companies that you're reaching out to and find out if they're doing the kind of story that you want to do. You know, like right now I'm getting calls from distributors, people who are interested in the film. And the first thing I do is go to the website and see, have they distributed a film like this before? Because that's going to tell me if they understand this particular type of film and how it should be marketed and where it should go and, you know, how much money it's going to cost to make it happen and all that kind of stuff, you know? But yeah, so starting out, get your story down on paper, get your script. I think that's how I would recommend you go.
Okay. Now let me ask you this. How many characters should one have in a film or a play? Because having a lot of characters could, you know, run into a lot of money.
Well, you know, characters are not really the problem. Locations is actually more of a problem than characters. But mm-hmm. like having a lot of locations in a film could make it get really expensive really quick. But that's really limitless. I would say, though, you know, if you're starting out, you should start small and stay focused. It's difficult to have an ensemble, to do an ensemble film well. You think about the films that you like the most and the ensemble films that you like the most. There's a lot of them that don't go well because you get on one character, you get on one character you like, and then you have to go to this other character. Maybe you're not so interested in that character, so the audience is bored. Or, you know, a lot of things could go awry. But if you're doing a film that has an ensemble cast, a large cast, I would say this. Every character, no matter how small, should have a beginning, middle, and end. They have to have a purpose in the film. And if you write them all individually before you start trying to interweave them and intertwine them, then you'll probably come out with a much more solid film than if you just start, you know, writing from the beginning, seven friends went to a bar. Because in that effort to write them through, you know, from the beginning, where we meet them in the film, what's their challenge, what's their goal, what's their obstacle, how do they overcome it, and, you know, where do they end? If you can't get through that, then they don't need to be in the film. You'll probably realize of those, you know, seven people, maybe you only need four of them to tell your story. You know, and that's not that five, six, and seven go away. Five, six, and seven may just need to be incorporated into one, two, and three. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. We do that a lot with from books screenplay from a novel. You have to sort of merge some characters together because in a book you can have so many. The audience, you know, your readers can always go back, turn the pages back. In a film, they can't do that. So if you don't have time to introduce a character properly, set them up, and, you know, give them enough emphasis, then sometimes they just have to go away or get merged.
Okay. Wow. All right. Now tell us a little bit about the different contests that you guys were in and what you had to do, such as the HBO and the different type of awards. What did you have to do in those contests?
There are a lot of competitions out there, but the thing I would say, when people ask me about competitions and festivals, there are a lot of wonderful festivals. I always ask, what is the prize and how is that prize going to help you further your career? Because winning a competition, just to say we won the thing, is mm-hmm. it's nice and it does feel good. I will admit that. It does feel good. But if the prize is like a champagne cocktail and, you know, you go to this event and they give you a glass of champagne and they give you a plaque, I don't know if that's really going to help you move your career forward. So in that I say, festivals like Urban World, where we are going to premiere, are really wonderful because they have a relationship with HBO, and you get these great networking opportunities. They do a luncheon with the DGA if you get accepted, where you can actually have some career-nourishing moments. The American Black Film Festival, which was in Miami for quite a few years but just moved to New York, is really great because they have a relationship with HBO also, but their top five short films go to HBO. So through that competition, if you get into that competition, you can get your film screened on HBO. It is almost impossible otherwise. The Latino American Film Festival, they also have a relationship like that with HBO. And so does, I think, Martha's Vineyard Film Festival. There's a couple of them out there, but you have to know, like, where you're going. It's almost impossible otherwise to get these things screened because those outlets are producing so much of their own content. They're not really looking for media to fill, you know, they don't need anything to fill a time slot. They've got oogobs content. So you really gotta check into these competitions to figure out what the end goal is. Who was it last? Was it, Up does a screenwriting competition where they gave $100,000 to the winning screenwriter to make their film. So you know, you can go online and you can go on Without a Box, and there's a festival a day in every city and every town. There's a film festival and there's competitions up the oogobs. But what are you actually winning? One of the best prizes is if the screenwriting competition gives you a script evaluation. If they're willing to give you
feedback on your script from some industry professionals. That's really awesome. You know, sometimes they have a prize that's like a sit-down with some industry professional. You get lunch with some executive somewhere. Now, you know, at that point, it's up to you to make this thing work for you, but at least there's a real opportunity there. I'm in-game focused. What's going to happen to me after this? The other thing I would look at with, you know, film festivals is where is the screening and how is it going to help you build your audience? Sometimes film festivals, you know, like I could start a film festival today. I know exactly how to do it, and it would be pretty easy. I could screen them in my bedroom if I wanted to, you know, invite 20 people right. over and be like, it's a film festival. So knowing where your film is going, the Urban World Film Festival, where we're going to premiere, is wonderful. It screens at the AMC Theater on 34th Street, on 34th Street and 8th Avenue in the heart of Manhattan. So it's like, that's it. Like, if I had done a big studio film and had a theatrical release, my goal would be to get it into that theater. By being accepted into this festival, my film premieres in that theater. So, you know, you just got to look at the end game and see how that's going to help you move forward with your career.
Wow, that's great information. I was writing some of it down. can you tell us a little bit about marketing? How are you able to promote and market your films, your projects, and things of that nature?
Well, you know, social media makes it a lot easier, I should say, but then also a lot harder because there's so much information being published. I heard some statistic that said that we are publishing more information in 48 hours now than was published in the history of time up until the year 2000. You know, it's like this blog show. Like, you know, before a radio show, there were only certain many outlets for a radio show. They were on certain number of hours of the day. Remember, radio used to shut off, television used to shut off. So, you know, even, you know, printing books and printing media, every time we type a text or something, we're publishing something. We are publishing information. And so it is hard to get mind share. Like, I can go on Facebook right now. I did, even for this interview. I put up a post. I sent out a text. I didn't tweet because I'm still slow with Twitter. It takes me a long time to do that thing. But I don't know. Like, I know some people saw it. I don't know how many people saw it. But there's so much information passing by them. Even if they did see it and it was interesting, you know, you got to make it stick. And the saddest part about that is it becomes another job for the filmmaker. And independent filmmakers already have too many jobs. And it used to be that there would come a point where marketing and distribution would be handled by the distribution company. But now everything is left to the hands of the filmmakers. So what I do then is take advantage of the wonderful network that I built in making the film. You know, all my wonderful crew from Jacksonville, Amanda Bullard, Jen Gillespie, you know, Pastor Wiggins, St. Paul Lutheran Church, all these great people, Walter, like if I start naming people, it'll go on for days, cricket. all these great people who supported the film, I reach out to them, and I hope that they reach out to their friends, and their friends reach out to a few people, and then in that way, we promote and market. The other thing I do is try to think around the box about all of the different factions that might be interested in my film. Even though I don't consider my film a black film, it has a black lead, so it is a black film. So ergo, I can look to those organizations. NAACP, there's a great organization. I think it's based here in New York, called Black Ivy. It's all of the Ivy League African-American students from all the Ivy League schools. They get together under this umbrella called Black Ivy. There's a group that specifically targets positive images of black men. We did a film called Barbasol, which was about dementia, and we reached out to the Alzheimer's Association. They adopted the film and gave us a wonderful award, which was really lovely, because they're using it as a teaching tool to open up dialogue about Alzheimer's within their community. So, you know, with this film, it's a matter of specifically finding parenting groups was a big one when I was doing my Kickstarter campaign. I reached out to, you know, there's lots of, like, Moms in Charge and these motherhood groups and parenting groups. Single mothers was another group. There's a whole thing about, you know, labor and delivery in the film. So this doula engagement in childbirth, you really have to just keep thinking about who's not already in your immediate circle would be interested and finding ways to connect with them. And once you find the groups, you have to connect with an individual and make a real connection. You have to talk to them, have a coffee, have a face-to-face, make a real connection, and engage them in supporting you by finding a way to support them. You know, if you can find a way to say, I would love for you to support this film and I can do this for you, now it becomes a reciprocal relationship. It's not just about being needy. So I find that to be helpful. It's a challenge. And I tell you, if I had money, that would be one of the first jobs I would give away. I would say I did have help during my Kickstarter campaign from a great company called Need Creative, who specialize, and there are other companies out there, in figuring out these other factions that would be interested in whatever it is that you're trying to market and how to get to them and who to communicate with and how to set up your Hootsuite account so you can tweet and Facebook and blast and email it all at the same time. I'd rather stick to filmmaking.
Right. Let me ask you this, because I want to say I just love your spirit, because you're very down to earth and you've won so many awards. You're so humble and you're just a people person. And so I wanted to ask you, for instance, here's a scenario. So I come to you and I say, here, I have I'm going to call it a play, maybe a short film, and I want to, in other words, see what you think about it. What will be that process, and what typically is the average fee for that? I know you can't quote fees or anything like that, but what will be the average fee? Because a lot of people are asking this question as well.
You know, it's funny because I just said I'm going to have to start charging a fee for reading scripts because it just it takes so much time.
Oh, I shouldn't have gave you that idea.
No. I was talking to a friend of mine about this. At a friend's wedding, but it takes so much time to read someone's script and get feedback. Now, I have been blessed. I have amazing friends in the film industry, my classmates from NYU, who, you know, I'll email them. I'll say, hey, can you take a look at this? They do the same for me, you know, that sort of thing. But when outsiders come and they want to drop, you know, 110 pages off on you, and there's no, like, it would be different if it was like, oh, I'm submitting the script to you because I would like for you to produce it, and I have a budget of, you know, $500,000, and I want to try to make this film or whatever it is. That's a different kind of read. Another thing is, like, I have a script. I want you to read it and tell me what you think. There's a lot of challenges with that because I don't really know if you want to know what I think.
Right.
My first question is, what is it that you want me to tell you about this script? Because if you just want me to tell you that it's good and it's worthwhile, like I could just tell you that without even reading it. I mean, you know, it's yours. You wrote it. Everything has a value to someone somewhere. So there's got to be, you know, more of a specific indication of why is it that you want me to read the script? What is it that you're looking for? Do you think you're having a challenge with something, or do you really think it's ready to go and you want to produce it? You want to know how much you think I think it's going to cost to make it. I don't know. How much should it cost to get somebody to read your script? This is where I say, if you're going to pay somebody to read your script, find a screenwriting competition that's willing to give feedback and submit your script to one of these screenwriting competitions. Because some of them, you know, they have a fee for submission, you know, maybe it's something under maybe $50 to $100. Screenwriting competitions tend to be less expensive than film. And they'll say, you know, your script will be evaluated and we'll give you a feedback sheet. I mean, at least in that way, you're killing two birds with one stone. If the person who's reading your script is only reading it because they're getting a fee, I don't know if you're actually going to get the right kind of feedback. You know what I mean?
That's right. And, you know, that's funny you said that because I was speaking to someone in Hollywood, and this person reads scripts, and I also have a friend who actually edited and read my scripts in Hollywood. But this one person told me, she says, a lot of people do not like for her to read their scripts because she tell them the truth. I said, that's the whole purpose of getting somebody to read your script, you know. She says she has to tell some people this just won't cut it. You have to redo it, and they get upset. But the whole purpose, as you're saying, is to get feedback that is constructive feedback and then make those corrections.
Yes, and most people don't. I mean, one of the great things I learned in New York University was how to be criticized. I mean, to be criticized en masse and be criticized individually and to accept feedback and to sift through the brash harshness of what people are saying to try to understand what it is that they're responding to or not responding to or what it is that's bothering them. But that takes time to learn. I mean, it takes a lot of time to learn how to receive that kind of criticism, especially if the work is hard work, you know, something that's coming from you personally and you're putting it out there. It's a challenge. But, you know, you can probably, if you reach out to the right person, you can get somebody to read your script. People want to see good work. If you have a good script and they want to help good work get created. So you can get somebody to look at your script. You just have to find the right somebody.
That's right. Now, what does Cultivated Films do? Are you guys just, you're a company that produce your own films, or do you produce other films as well?
All of the above, yes. But we produce films, we produce music videos, we produce commercials, we produce corporate media, anything that's visual content we produce. So if you come to us with a project and hopefully a budget, we evaluate that and tell you, you know, what it is that we can provide for you based on that. One of the things one of the things I do is script breakdowns. You know, I'll take a script and break it down in budget. It's called a budget and board. And, you know, if someone feels that they have a script that is ready to go, they can hire me to come in and do a budget and board for them. And basically we'll break down the script into, you know, how many characters are going to be, how many days, how many locations, what kind of equipment you're going to need, you know, what do you think the budget's going to be to make this film happen. So.
Now tell me about your commercials. Is this a promotional commercials, and what commercials have you guys produced?
We produced a really great commercial for Black History Month called Black Rose that actually won the AICP award, which is Endgame, a wonderful award to win because your film, which is a commercial, gets submitted into the MoMA archives. So I have a film that is in the Museum of Modern Art archives right now because we made this commercial for Black History Month. I made it with director Lapo Melzi. It was his concept and his idea, and it was a stop-motion piece that he did. It was really beautiful. And, you know, this was one of those things. He came to me, he's like, I have an idea and I want to do a film. I said, sure, I'll help you do it. And we did it, and we won this great award. And It's one of those moments like you just don't know where it's going to take you, but I believed in him as an artist, ergo we move forward. So as far as commercials go, I've done a few spec commercials. We did a commercial with Christina Nikolova, who's an amazing Bulgarian writer, director, and DP that aired in Bulgaria and Eastern Europe. But all of this stuff is available to see on my website.
Okay. Wow. That is so great. Now, do you have anything else you would like to share, or do you have any projects other than the Christmas wedding baby coming up that you would like to tell us about?
I guess, you know, mostly I just want to make sure that I mentioned the really wonderful people who supported me in making this film. Chan Harris, who came on board as my executive producer, has been an angel, literally. He came in and believed in me the way I believe in other people and was just willing to help me make this thing happen. Ralph Scott, who's one of my producers, has been by my side, still by my side. We're in post-production now. He's helping with the sound recording of the live music that we have to do this week for the film. And Stymax is my brand integration specialist. When you see the film, there's tons of amazing brands who came and donated products for the film. Designer clothes like the Siguala, Beauty and Burke, David Tutera. We had V-Tech Toys, Oyster Products, Coca-Cola, Sylvester Vineyards. I mean, all these just amazing companies came in, Apple, LG Phones, and gave us products that we were able to put in the phone, I mean, put in the film and have, you know, released properly so that we can actually show them in the film. And I wouldn't have any of that without Anne. She is just great. She has a company called AMAC Placement. If you're a filmmaker out there, you need a brand integration specialist to help you through that stuff, because it can be really helpful. Like, my cast and crew snacks basically came from contributions from all the companies that had product placement in the film. I talked about my great cast. You really have got to come to the Urban World Film Festival. We screen September 19th, 4:45 is a Friday afternoon, and see the film, see the amazing cast, and all the work the crew did. Leonardo D'Antoni is my DP. The cinematography is just exceptional. But not only for my film, but Urban World Film Festival, go and see the other films. See what's happening in underrepresented cinema, because these are the people who are trying to get a different voice out there. You know, I have a lot of respect for Tyler Perry, I have a lot of respect for Spike Lee and those guys, but there are other people who are trying to say something out there to our audience, and you got to support them. So, you know, Urban World Film Festival is in New York. There are a lot of great, there's probably a Black Film Festival in your community because they're everywhere. Atlanta has one, Miami has one, San Francisco has one, Chicago has one, Austin has one. Wherever you are, there's one, and you need to find it and get to it and see what's happening out there and understand that we're really trying to tell your stories and redefine what is the truth about our community. And thank you to you for taking the time to do this interview, because it's one thing to see the film. It's a whole other great thing to be able to hear the perspective of the artist that created. And to give this much time and energy, I really, really appreciate you taking the time to have me on tonight.
Sure, and I thank you, Ms. Kiara. And before you leave, I wanted to ask you one more question. What genres do you write about in your particular projects?
I do all genres. I shouldn't say I do all genres. I tend to do narrative, drama. Yeah, drama. The film that I'm working on right now, it's called The Project. It's a thriller. And I did write, you know, I have written things in the past that are outside of this genre of, like, narrative comedy. But I think my sweet spot is sort of romantic comedy, but in a very smart and sophisticated and spunky way, like a Love Actually, or, you know, I should have a great list of films to ramble off to you right now, but that, my mind is going blank. But yeah.
Okay, that's great. So is there anything else you have on your heart that you would like to share before we conclude?
It is not lost on me. This is my first interview specifically for this film. It is not lost on me that a celebrator of the Lord has called upon me first to come and talk about my work. And so I just have to stop and thank him for bringing you into my world so that we could have this moment together. Because you just never know where your blessings are going to come from. You just never know. I don't know who's listening tonight, but I hope that somebody was enlightened and or inspired by our conversation. And I thank you so much for having me on, and I thank him so much for always being by my side. There's a prayer in the film. It's not a religious film. My film is not a religious film, but it's very spiritual if you pay attention. And there's a prayer in the film that is actually my prayer, and it's, I know there is a plan for me that's on a path I cannot see. I will move on in faith and trust. It is the best for all of us.
Wow, that is great. And once again, I want to thank you. And at this time, there are a lot of callers actually on the line, and I'm just going to pause. And if someone want to ask a question, or if you just want to, if you were just here to listen, that's fine too. But I'm going to pause and ask at this time if anyone had any questions, because actually there are a lot of people online. So I'll pause for like 20 seconds to see if someone has a question.
Okay, great.
Okay, well, Ms. Kiara, you have many listeners, and so I want to appreciate you for coming on the Love of Jesus Ministry and taking out time of your busy schedule. Please continue to connect with me, and if I'm in the New York area or if you have any projects around the world, please let me know. And once again, may God bless you and your family and your endeavors.
Thank you so much, dear, and you too.
All right, thank you. Have a good night.
Good night.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Ms. Kiara C. Jones. Be sure to connect with her. She is on Facebook. And also check out some of her projects and films, because her cultivating film production company is doing great things. And so it's just a nice thing to support and also to enjoy the quality films that are coming out. I have a few announcements to make. First of all, I want to thank God, my family and friends, for listening at this particular time to the Love Live Jesus Ministry. I have a couple of announcements. Please continue to encourage your family and friends to log on to blogtalkradio.com/freedalove. That's blogtalkradio.com/FREDALOVE. In addition to that, make sure that you understand that A Spiritual Guide on the Go is online. If you go to BarnesandNobles.com or Bookworld, that's BOOKWHIRL.com, you will find A Spiritual Guide to Go. In addition to that, gospel artists, promoters, actors, actress, any positive community leader, please reach out to Alfreda Love. That's A-L-F-R-E-D-A-L-O-V-E or F-R-E-D-A-L-O-V-E. Or you can email me at emonya_love@yahoo.com. I would love, love, love to have you on the ministry. In addition to that, make sure that you mark your calendars for tomorrow, as we will have our Mission Sunday, and everyone is invited, so please come out. You're invited to the Great Ebenezer Baptist Church. That is 919 Dutton Avenue, Waco, Texas, where the Reverend Dr. Carrie Berkeley is our pastor, so be sure to come and help us celebrate our Mission Day. Also, if you could mark down October 4th, that's where Miss Angelia Robinson will be in the Fort Worth area, kicking off an event entitled Unity in the Community. If you remember who she is the character who played with Tyler Perry on the Have and Have Nots. And so she will be in the house with other artists from around the world. And also she is working with Mr. Fred Hammond, who we know to be a great psalmist in the gospel industry. In addition to that, make sure that you mark down October 17th and 18th in Houston, Texas, where we will meet Ms. Oprah Winfrey and others who will share things about life and who will empower us and motivate us to keep pressing forth. Also, make sure that you continue to watch the Love Live Jesus Ministry and connect with me on the page entitled I Got to Have Faith, because our guest will also be listed and posted on that particular webpage. In addition to that, make sure you're praying for 170 individuals. If you have to pray for all of your family members, put them all on one line and pray for them one by one. And do not forget to pray for yourself. On tomorrow, we will have another filmmaker who will come and join us, and she will talk about how music and film go hand in hand. On Monday, we will also have a segment entitled Youth Success, how we can make our youth successful in the schools and churches and in the community. And on Tuesday, we will have the actor who is going to portray Missy Elliott. So, therefore, you want to be sure to tune in to the Love of Jesus Ministry in the next couple of days and invite your friends and connect with me on Facebook. Friend me, connect with me, because I would love to have you on the ministry. Once again, we would like to thank our guest today, Ms. Kiara C. Jones. Be sure to connect with her. Be sure to check out her work and support her and support all of the other guests who have come on the ministry. If someone asks you what that big, beautiful smile is all about, you tell them that love lifts you up because God is love. Until next time, which is tomorrow, take care of yourself and each other. Goodbye, everybody.